SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. Hour two, about 10 minutes in, and Johnny D, Express Bet, joins us with the road to the Triple Crown season, pretty well paved, and there's a little extension, an exit ramp to Louisville that is to come here these next 3 weeks. But Johnny, good morning.
Stevie, how are you? Welcome back from your road to the Triple Crown, all your time traveling this winter, and sorry we couldn't have the weather straightened out for you by the time you got back.
Well, I can only.
This is ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah. It doesn't. Something's not right. But what are you going to do? We just we'll assume that the sun will come out tomorrow.
What's that old story? Everybody complains about the weather, but nobody ever does anything about it.
Well, this is when you get to mid-April and it's snowing at Keeneland and it's snowing at Saratoga. This is a little silly. Yesterday in Memphis. It was 40 something degrees. I mean, it's just, I feel bad for the people there.
Wait a minute, but you got ribs. It makes up for it.
I got ribs at Marlowe's, and Elvis had eaten there from the time it opened, 1974. I was sufficiently impressed. And typically, Memphis style ribs with the dry rub is not typically my favorite. This has got just a thin layer of their sauce at Marlowe's. I was suitably impressed.
Well, maybe someday I'll get down there and be a world traveler like you, or at least a United States traveler like
yes.
you.
Yes.
I had to be suitably impressed this weekend by some of the racing that we saw. Yeah, you know, really nice, really good races this weekend. And it's great to hear how the track crews, you know, got things in shape, particularly at Oaklawn Park, as you were saying. And also, you know, Keeneland, they were kind of dodging weather here and there. They didn't get the rain that they were expecting on Saturday, which was great. We saw some nice races. You know, Steve, the Unique Bella, you surprise me. If anything in this life is certain, if history has taught us anything, it's that you can beat any horse.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, they always say if there's one horse to beat and you're thinking about entering in the race, but there's one horse you're afraid of, go ahead and enter. If there's two or more, forget it. But, and this is another example, the gates open. You know, it's almost a bit maddening because we go through all these machinations of handicapping and figures, and we're doing, you know, I'm continuing the Kentucky Derby preparation, and the gates open, and Unique Bella kind of, you know, almost, I don't know what she did. She just kind of, what was the word you used? Akimbo,
yeah. She was splayed.
Yeah, her layer.
Yeah.
Yeah, she splayed. She just didn't, you know, and I think about all the work we do, all the investigation we do, all the figuring and analyzing, and the gates open, boom. So that's why you've got to make odds your friend, because you've got to factor in that something might happen. You don't know if it's going to happen, but something might happen. So sometimes, you know, is it worth singling a unique fellow on some kind of a pick four or pick five you're putting together? Yes. You kind of have to. But as far as wagering at short odds, because the difference is that when you're putting together, let's say a pick six, and you've got a 2-5 favorite, go ahead and single that one. It gives you room to spread in other races. And even if that one wins, you can still put together some nice winners around it and make the payoff, make the odds, put the odds in your favor and have a great payoff. When you bet a horse like that to win, there's little upside, you know? So, I mean, obviously many people, it's funny. It's funny. You look at these 2-5 favorites, 3-5 favorites, and people say, well, I didn't bet it. You can't find anybody who bet on the horse, but the horse is 3-5. It's like the old Yogi Berra line, you know, about the restaurant. Oh, it's no good anymore. Nobody goes there. It's too crowded.
Exactly.
Horses are 3-5, and no one will admit to betting on them. So how do they become 3-5? Anyway, these things happen. That's all you can say. Really, really, you know, sometimes horses can overcome those incidents. But on that racetrack, that's not really her style. It's kind of her style, you know, she couldn't overcome it. She's got more to do now. But training-wise and everything going into the race, she couldn't have been doing any better. Oh, also, how about, you didn't mention it. I don't think you mentioned it yet this morning. Laurel Park, someone hit the Rainbow Six, a single ticket, for $400,000, roughly. I had to go look. I almost played it. I started to look at it, and then, I don't know, something happened, and I stopped. I didn't play it. But the first leg, I did look at the first leg, and what you had, look at these prices. The first leg, $109.80. So that was a bomber, right? Second leg, $580. Third leg, $8. Fourth leg, $680. $620. And what am I doing? Am I missing one? I guess I'm missing one, huh? Oh, wait a minute. Let me get it for you. Hold on here. Hold on. $620 in the eighth. So we got $109.80 in the fourth, $580 in the fifth, $8 in the sixth, $680 in the seventh, and $620 in the eighth. So other than that one horse, there wasn't a winner that paid over $8. And this is a 20-cent wager.
Right.
So if you had gone all and then just handicapped semi-normally, it stands to reason that you could have maybe ruined this guy's day or gal's day. But anyway, I just found that interesting. And what happens is that this, with a 20-cent minimum, a smaller player can hit the all button. In that first race was a 5.5 turf claiming $7,500 race. So you're looking at it and, you know, you say, well, I'm having a tough time with this race. You could afford to buy the race. You could hit the all button for 20 cents. For $2, you cannot, a small player cannot do that.
Sure.
It's really the difference between, it's one of the differences between the Rainbow Six and the Pick Six. It's more approachable for the small player. Gulfstream's Rainbow Six on Saturday, or I think Sunday. $14,000 it paid. Over $14,000. Pretty good for a 20-cent wager. Anyway, I just thought that was interesting. As long as we're talking about a single in the Pick Six, a horse like Unique Bella, I thought throwing in that Laurel result was very interesting. It took him like 31 racing days to get up to the 400K, but somebody was happy they did.
It was the ticket. I saw Dave Joseph's release, and then it was up in the main, that main hub, that main wagering hub.
So that means they had a lobster dinner.
Maybe. I did not see in the press release how much. Do we know what the ticket, what the investment was?
I did not see any.
Yeah, it wasn't in the press release.
Any details? No.
Yeah. Well,
this is something I understand. I understand a person's reluctance on having their name used. I get that for a variety, for so many reasons. I get it. I understand it. When someone hits a big, someone has a big winner, I understand a person's reluctance in having their name released. I get it. But what I don't always understand is why we can't, as an industry, as a sport, you know, but we're not together, and we have different governing bodies and different this and that now. But I would like to see, just as you asked, your first question was, what did the ticket look like? How many tickets were there? You know, because people are very interested in that, and I say that this is possible. We know where the ticket was bought. We know what the ticket looked like. Do we know all of the possible combinations? No. If the guy put in a bunch of different tickets, we won't know that. But if there's one ticket with everything on it, what did the winning ticket look like? You know, this kind of information, it spurs interest in the game, because people look at it and they say, hey, I can do that. You know, I could put in a ticket like that. That's not impossible. Now, the other day, the guy that hit at Santa Anita, I think he put in a $39,000 and took down the whole carryover pot or single ticket jackpot, whatever it's called at Santa Anita. And, okay, I look at that and I say, I can't do that. That's fine. Congratulations. That's why I hate the jackpot. Because you're playing a different game than I am. I can't do that. I'm never going to do that. It's impossible for me to do what you just did. And I can't play against you. But when I see a ticket where a guy spends, you know, 48, 216, I look at that and I say, yeah, I can do that. So it encourages me to want to take part in that. Also, I think in other countries, in my years of traveling, I've noticed that, like, in countries where gambling doesn't have, I don't know, such a stigma, but anyway, they promote their winners. I mean, you'll have an owner on the cover of the next day's racing section bragging about how much he won betting on his horse, you know, or a trainer saying how much they won cashing on their horse. I like that stuff. I'd like to see people. I'd like to see good stories about people winning. Eddie Olczyk, who won the Pegasus, was on your show. Was very, very open about how he played. What, you know, his theory, his rationale. Now, okay, that's a tournament. I understand. It's a little different. I get it, but still. People are interested in how winners win, and we want to know, how'd you do it? And I don't think we get enough information about how people did it. And it's partly privacy. It's partly, you know, I understand if you don't want your name released, I get it. I understand that part. But how you did it is what I'm getting at. Don't ask me questions, Steve, unless you want a long answer.
Yeah, that's all right. Talk about what your impressions were as we wrapped up at Oaklawn and at Keeneland, and Magnum Moon doing a pretty good impression of Justify winning and staying undefeated and setting up yet another you know, fascinating block in this Derby.
I tell you, Steve, we've got a really either we're top heavy this year, or we've got a really deep, extensive list of really talented horses. It's an impressive year, it really is. And you know, Magnum Moon, dominating performance again. The drifting out part, look. This is a personal thing with me. There's nothing definitive about it, but he drifted out a little bit in the lane in this previous race. And this past Saturday in the Arkansas Derby, he drifted out even more. That bothers me a little bit when I'm trying to look for a horse who's going to win the Kentucky Derby or hit the board in the Kentucky Derby. That drifting stuff, why? You've had enough race. I mean, okay, you want to say he's lightly raced? Okay, he is. But they're all lightly raced. You should be running in a straight line at this point. It's just the other tidbit the other day with Noble Moon, Noble Indy, and the inquiry when he drifted in and bumped and enticed a couple times. What, in addition to the inquiry, what bothered me is I don't like to see that laying in, that drifting in. Now, I understand jockeys sometimes like to bring the horse down and be close to their competitor so that they get that competitive spirit going. I understand all that. But this guy, he kind of made a turn. He didn't just move down. He dropped down, and that laying in kind of, you know. Look, we're looking at little factors. We're looking for everyone's talented this year, so you've got to look for additional factors. And those are two runners who have done things in their races. Both, you want to say impressive winners? Well, they both won by open lengths. Okay, yeah, that's impressive. They ran fast enough. But they did things in their race that maybe in a year where we're loaded, maybe that's a reason to lower them down on your list of who you're going to wager on. So those are just a couple little. One other thing I noticed from this weekend, Combatant. Now, here's a guy who I went back and watched all his races, and I thought to myself, wow, you know, this guy, he really tries. You know, he just digs in, and he just keeps kind of coming, and he just hasn't put it all together yet. Maybe this is a Derby superfecta kind of horse, Steve Asmussen. He hasn't won the Derby. In fact, I think he's the top trainer with most tries without having won the Derby. I think he's at 18. Maybe this, you know, he can get into, I don't like him as much as the top guys, but maybe he can get in the superfecta. But he couldn't go by Solomini the other day. And that bothered me. And he must have, when he was born, promised his mother that he would never pass Solomini. Because again, Saturday, he can't go by Solomini. Give credit to Solomini for digging in and fighting him off, but he looked sure as heck like he was going to go by Solomini. He couldn't do it. So, yeah. You know, I'm just picking up little things in these races that kind of, I don't know if they mean anything, if they don't mean anything. I'm trying to remember. Who was the horse the other day that switched back to his left lead? Oh, Good Magic in winning at Keeneland. Late in the race, he jumps back to his left lead. Does that bother me? Not really. He was in front. He was at, I think, his sixth different racetrack in his sixth start. Is that important? Is that critical? I don't think so. But, you know, it's noteworthy.
Regarding Combatant, Johnny, since you bring him up, and can bring people, use that opening to bring people up to speed. He's sitting at 21st, and interestingly, the next four, there's going to be four AEs when they draw the Derby, and right now, if the Derby draw was today, all four of them would be Steve Asmussen horses. Combatant, Snapper Sinclair, Reride, and Dream Baby Dream, 32, 22, 20, and 20 points, and there's potential, obviously. In fact, Asmussen even was quoted appropriately Monday of Derby week, looking to leave last year, was sitting 22nd, and he ended up being a Derby runner-up. So there's plenty of time for Combatant to get in, and he may even get in. You know, people are talking about the Elliott Walden aftermath of Arkansas Derby, where he seemed a little iffy about Quip running in the Derby. He said that they're going to make a decision. So there's room yet for a few things to happen, as it always seems to be.
Correct. And we know how difficult it is, even at this late date, to keep those 20 intact. This is not your, I will go out on a limb and say, this is not your complete Derby field yet.
Right. Exactly. There'll be some movement yet. And any of the immediate movement would be with the Steve Asmussen team. And of course, Asmussen, you know, along with Pletcher and Baffert in particular, you know, had what looked to be, and Dale Romans, very strong hands. And Romans has got a pair, obviously, Free Drop Billy and Promises Fulfilled. Baffert with a pair as well, and Todd with the four. So, but Steve Asmussen right now, with all those prospects, is sitting at 21st through 24th. And then comes Restoring Hope, Sporting Chance, Gravitos, who actually, Gravitos should be mentioned out of the Lexington win. He ran for the layoff and off the injury and surgery. He ran very well and was a game try. That was, they got to be happy with that comeback from him.
Yeah. Although in some cases, people may view it as lucky to get into the Derby. In some cases, these horses may be unlucky to get in the Derby. Hmm. Some of them
that's a fair point.
Might be better off taking a little rest. But that's fine. I mean, look, you know, people say, like a horse like, I don't know, Hofburg, let's say. People say, you're rushing him into the Derby. First of all, Bill Mott would not, under any circumstances, run a horse in the Kentucky Derby he didn't think belonged there, because he doesn't need it. Let's just say that. Second of all, you know, running a horse in the Kentucky Derby, everyone acts like you're beating them with a stick. They run, and it doesn't ruin horses. It's not, the competition is not what ruins horses. Do they get hurt? Yes. Is it the Kentucky Derby because they're in the Kentucky Derby they get hurt? No. If they can't keep up, they're just going to get beat a long way. Are they going to get discouraged? I discouraged. They've been beat before. I mean, it's not like, you know, I just don't think it's as terrible as some people make it out to be. You know, they're horse races. The ones who make the big effort, the ones who win the race, the ones who give everything they have and run as fast as they possibly can and dig down deep and fight and set a personal best, those are the ones who are affected, because they've expended energy. They've done something. The guys who can't keep up, who just kind of, you know, are behind, they're doing the best they can, but, you know, they can recover from that. It's the competitor who gives everything, who lays it all out there. Those are the ones where recovery is an important thing. That's why a Triple Crown is so hard to accomplish, because you've presumably expended so much energy to win the Kentucky Derby. You come back in 2 weeks, again, you have to fire your best shot to win the Preakness. And now 3 weeks later, you got to come back into Belmont. It's harder on those guys than it is on the guys who don't, you know, necessarily compete in the end. That's my opinion. I could be wrong, but that's how I feel. You know, I do believe in Arrogate's case, he ran the race of a lifetime. That was his ultimate creation. And, you know, that expenditure, you know, he never quite recovered while he was racing. We never saw the same Arrogate again. Now, that's an isolated incident. It's an incident if you want to relate it to this year's three-year-olds, you can look at Mendelsohn and say, you know, where have I seen a monster effort in the desert not reproduce again ever in a horse's career? Yeah, I saw it last year. So maybe you want to think about that.
Lots to absorb, and we've got what is at least a working 20 with some others to consider, and you've got a Derby superfecta box to put together, and you got to start breaking eggs.
It's time. Wager guide, Express Bet Kentucky Derby wager guide. We're putting it together. We'll have it out not this Thursday, but next Thursday.
My God. Don't say that. Wait a minute. Is that right? Yeah,
no,
it is right.
27.
It is right.
27, yeah.
Oh, Jesus.
Well, look, you're on the road. You don't know what's going on.
Well, but I got to turn in my piece on the 25th.
Yes. Correct. That's
weak.
We got plenty of time.
Listen to you. We got plenty of time. All right. I got to make my Derby commitment by next week from Wednesday. Terrific.
When you get to update it, it's not the end of the world.
Yeah. They don't read the updates. They do, but they read the first analysis. That's the one that stays with
you. You can claim the updates. You have an out.
Exactly. That's the safety valve. I know, but I've lived with what all the years I've done the Derby, all three wagering guides, I've stuck with the horse that I wrote up about, and have fared okay. I mean, none of them have failed to hit the board. Yeah, thank you. All right, I'll start working. Johnny, we're going to have Tim Layden's going to follow us, and we're going to talk to him. The tribute to Bill Knack, and I'm sure, like every other racing and sports fan, and anybody that appreciates good writing, share the loss of Bill Knack. Felt like could go on reading Knack forever, and luckily loved his writing and
met the man in 1979, and great guy, and what a writer,
very much, and a fascinating captivating storyteller. Tim Layden will join us next. Johnny, I appreciate it. Be that much closer next week.
Thank you, Stevie.
Johnny D, XB Johnny D. Let's take a break here. Just past the bottom of the hour, and as I mentioned, Tim Layden of Sports Illustrated. I sent out the link to his beautiful appreciation. That's sinow.com. and the kind of writer Bill Knack was, the kind that other writers you can imitate the style, but tougher, impossible to duplicate. Tim Layden next.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey folks, Eddie Olczyk here. In my career, I've experienced all of North America's biggest sporting events, and none of them are quite as fun as the Preakness Stakes. It's a weekend-long party in Baltimore, complete with the best three-year-olds racing for the middle jewel of the Triple Crown. And this year, my friends at ExpressBet are giving one lucky customer the chance to join me and Marilyn for the big race. What do you have to do to win? Sign up for their $25,000 Preakness Big Bet Sweepstakes and start betting the races with ExpressBet. The grand prize winner gets tickets to the race, hotel accommodations, airfare, and more. Plus, ExpressBet is giving you $25,000 to bet on the Preakness. That's right, 25 grand. With ExpressBet picking up the tab, you get to play the Preakness Stakes like a high roller. Check out ExpressBet.com to learn more and register today. And I hope to see you in the winner's circle.
Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void where prohibited. National Gambling Support Line, 800-522-4700.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired, PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
While being on the cutting edge of scientific and nutritional research, Biomedical Research Labs has developed the number one selling equine blood builder in the world, the most advanced muscle builder and tie-up preventer, and now the best anti-bleeding paste ever made. To find out how EPO Equine Unlock and Bleeder Guard can help your equine athletes, contact me, Joseph Vellante, at 215-501-6880 and visit brlscience.com.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9
384-6-4-3. Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back at the races. Coming up on 15 to the top of the hour, a little bit after 11, we'll connect with Brian Bouye from the National Museum of Racing Hall of Fame. The announcement coming here in the next 15 to 20 minutes of the inductees that were voted in. And right now, Tim Layden joins us on what is a sad occasion. And the news of Bill Knack's passing Friday night into Saturday morning spread, particularly with the turf riding community and horse racing fans and horse players, and then more widely through anybody that can read and appreciate quality writing. And Knack, a singularly fascinating personality and one that was just revered by colleagues and particularly those that grew up reading him and then entering the sports writing world, and that includes Tim Layton. And Tim joins us. Tim, like everyone, so sorry. And, of course, the SI community and at Newsday and anywhere that Knack spent any time reflecting on what a pleasure it was to be around him.
Yeah, Steve, I was actually thinking as you were describing Bill's career there for a moment that the one, you know, a lot of us, when we pass away, our family and friends and colleagues will remember us. And Bill left behind such a volume of brilliant work. And I'm sort of in a sad way. I'm thrilled that people have maybe spent some part of the last couple of days going back and rereading the best of Bill's work, or not even the best, because Bill at his less than best was great. And you know, I hope people have gone back and enjoyed some of his writing, and I hope they continue to do that, because you know, he really, really was as good as it gets in my profession, and not just on horse racing, but certainly that was his first love, and what he did with the most passion and really the best.
Your piece at SI.com really set the tone and reflects that image that I tried to invoke, which is a young writer, you know, looking to, you know, someone that whose work you had read. And you talked about the gathering after a Travers, and anybody that goes to a big day, whether it's at Saratoga or, you know, coming off Oaklawn, you know, the night after a big day of racing, there's always carousing, and whether it's the environment that you were in, where Knack was writing still. Talk about your first awareness of Bill Knack, and then being lucky enough to encounter him and then work with him.
Bill was Bill was about, I guess you'd say, half a generation ahead of me. He's 16 years older than I am. So by the time I became aware of Bill's work, he was at Sports Illustrated. I never read him at Newsday because there was no internet back then, and you read your local newspaper, not everyone else's local newspaper. But when he went to SI in 78, I was a senior in college, and I immediately began reading him. And just as a young journalist, it's just, SI was a powerhouse, and I still think we're good. But back then, with Gary Smith and Bill Knack and Frank DeFord and Curry Kirkpatrick, and it just, the list goes on. But Bill was as good as any of those people. He's as good as anyone that's ever written at SI. I started doing the races in 76, 77, 78 when I was working in the Capital District. And I actually met Bill once before that. The first time I actually met Bill Knack was it was after the Travers in 1980. The story I described on SI.com was in 81. But in 1980, I was walking out of the jocks room at Saratoga after the Travers, and Bill was heading to walk into the jocks room. And, you know, I remember Bill was always looked a little rumpled and hurried, and not when he was in a formal setting, but when he was working. And he came walking up to me, and I just thought he was going to breeze on past, and he stopped me, and he said, did you get, and I can't remember who the jock was, but did you get so-and-so? And I said, I did. And Bill said, how was he? And I said, he was pretty good. And Bill started to walk in, and I said what you say to any other journalist. I said, Bill, I think he's gone, which that happens. I had actually seen the guy walk out with his riding crop and his suitcase, and he was gone. And Bill said, well, do you have anything? And I gave him a quote. The quote did not appear in Sports Illustrated, but this is just two writers helping each other out, which we all do. And I was so thrilled to give Bill Knack a quote, and we sort of introduced each other and shook hands at that time. And every time we ever saw each other after that, he called me Timmy. And that's Bill and my mother and my cousin Lisa. And those are the only people left on earth that called me Timmy. And that's what Bill called me right till the last time we were together. And I love that about him. And, you know, the story you described at the Travers in 81, there was a party at a rental house. I think it was Steve Schwartz's house. Steve, the former public relations chief for NYRA and for Monmouth Park, and he had a little party at his house. And I just remember seeing Bill in this den writing his SI story, and I just stood in the doorway for a few minutes, and I thought so many things. I thought, how good is what he's writing, and can I go peek over his shoulder? And I thought, you know, could I ever get a job like that someday? And because we all put ourselves in those positions, and Bill called me in, and he was going over a quote or a scene at one or the other, and he said, is this the way you remember it? And, you know, I just yeah, that's the way I remember it. And, you know, maybe there was one adjustment in something that I had remembered differently, and it was just great. And, you know, we saw each other frequently many over the years after that, and just a great friend and a great role model, and just a guy we're all going to miss.
There's so many layers of his personality and his interests and elements to discuss. One of the things that to me is notable is how the recognition that he was among the, you know, the best turf riders we've seen. There's a portion, Tim, to probably talk about what was an evolution of turf riding as we know it versus what Evan Shipman and Charlie Hatton did. And sure. I don't want to say there was an interjection of one's own presence, but that probably is the difference. There was much more of personal reflection. The events and the horses and the personalities were viewed very specifically through Knack's, you know, own prism and experience.
I think yes. I also think, you know, what Bill brought to all his writing, but I think to turf riding in particular, because you know, going back and reading Hatton and reading Joe Hirsch, and which I did when I first got into the business, and this is reflective of all sports writing. I mean, if you look at Grantland Rice versus Seth Wickersham now, just to name one great young writer, there's a pretty big difference, and a lot of it is in the reporting and in the studying and in the, you know, I think sports writing and turf writing were observational at one time. You saw it, you write it. And they were wonderful wordsmiths that did that. But, you know, Bill, and he wasn't the first, but he was the best. Bill got out of the press box, and Bill got out of his car, and Bill went and got to know people, and he brought his passion to the writing, not only in his personal reflection, but also in getting to know people and studying and reporting. And, you know, the great thing that I want any young journalist or any writer who is in this business or who wants to get in it or who admires it, understand that when you read Bill Knack, Bill worked so hard at his stories. I mean, he reported, he made the extra call, then he made the extra call after that, and then the extra call after that. And then he suffered in the writing. His writing looks like it was done easily, like all the great ones, but Bill was tortured. He was as tortured as any of us, and in a good way, in a beautiful way. And that's how that language came out onto the paper and onto the screen. And, you know, but in terms of changing turf writing, I think it was just the depth of reporting that Bill brought to it, along with his personal passion. And obviously, all of that was applied most passionately to Secretariat.
To whom he's so closely tied. There are also a number of individuals and people that from different walks of life or different journalistic vantage points. Roger Ebert, who he grew up with, and I noted that you included in your piece that Ebert, you know, said that he was a great American prose stylist, and mm-hmm. that you know, that comes from you know, from having a literary appreciation and a classic education, and then being able to the way Jack Whitaker or Haywood Hale Brune could extemporaneously have a verbal essay, Knack crafted it on paper.
And Bill loved words, and that's the thing. He, you know, I wrote about this in my remembrance of Bill, and a lot of people talked about this, how Bill could recite the last page of The Great Gatsby from memory, and he could do it backward, and he could do it in Spanish. But the thing is, Bill memorized a lot of great literature. It's just something he started to do when he was in his 30s and 40s, and he loved language and he loved writing so much that he decided he would memorize some of it, and he would trot out his memorized passages in parties and in social settings, and it was kind of a parlor trick. But to him, it was more than that, because he would also recite these things to you walking along the backstretch or eating in the kitchen at Churchill Downs or Belmont Park. He just whenever he sent me a note about a story, it was almost always about a passage or a sentence that I had written. It was almost never about the body of work as a whole, because he just, and I think all the great writers are like that, but Bill was his love of words and writing in combination with the size of his personality just made him so memorable. And, that's just Bill.
As much as the people who are reading the pieces in some cases for the first time, but I think certainly a wide swath of sport fan and racing fan or horse player have been reading Knack in one form or another for years, they were probably, if they haven't had the occasion to hear him in person tell the stories, they're missing something that was a treat that was distinctly different. Reading Knack and listening to Knack were two distinct kinds of experiences.
Yeah, it's funny, Steve. A year and a half ago, Jim Mulvihill and some others asked Bill and I to come out to Tucson to the annual, convention.
The symposium.
Symposium, right. They asked Bill and I to share a panel and tell our stories about writing about horse racing. And I remember saying to Jim, So Jim, I'm happy to come out and tell you all my stories, and I have good ones, but I promise you I'm going to just sit up there and listen to Knack, and I'll interject something now and then, but you're getting a storyteller deluxe here, and I'll help it along as I can, but I'm happy to take the plane ticket and the hotel room and the dinners just to hear Bill, and it was great, and Bill stepped aside and he talked very, very glowingly of my work to the people in that room, and I love him for that, because we're all insecure. He loved to tell the stories. And when someone asks me to tell a story about covering American Pharoah, I take a deep breath and I try to make it not boring. But Bill didn't look at it that way. If you wanted to hear Bill talk about Secretariat in the spring of 1972 when he was a two-year-old, Bill would dive in and deliver those stories as if he were a theater performer doing a one-man show on Broadway. He loved to talk about the stories that he wrote and the stories that he didn't write. He never wrote about Dr. Fager, but he could talk about them all day. Or Damascus. He never wrote about Damascus, but he could talk about them all day. And that was just, if you've ever been to dinner with Bill, you sat and listened, and it was great.
I was in the room that day at Symposium.
Yep.
And there's an odd harmony, Tim, to this Robbie Davis, who he concentrated on for a good portion of that piece and that presentation, is going to be riding again and riding again regularly. That's kind of an interesting corollary.
Well, and the Robbie Davis story, you know, I mean, Bill, again, that's one of my favorites. I like it more than Pure Heart. I love Pure Heart, but, you know, as I tweeted out last night, it took me 28 years to realize that Pure Heart isn't about Secretariat. It's about a man getting old. And when you read it that way, to me, the story is infinitely more powerful. And Bill was willing to give himself up like that. But Robbie Davis, Bill got Robbie Davis to talk about being abused as a child when nobody did that. You know, we see those stories all the time now, and they're important and powerful, but it didn't happen back then, and it doesn't happen in the jocks room. You know, that's a culture of silence when it comes to those things. It still is, I'm sure. And what an important piece of journalism that was, and really just blew me away when I read it in ways that Pure Heart didn't. But Pure Heart's a wonderful, wonderful story, too.
Dublin Green running on Wednesday.
Wow.
Robbie.
Where Robbie, is he?
At Aqueduct. And
wow.
Robbie is in the best shape that he's been in, he says, in decades, and clear-headed, and he says physically he feels as good as he has in I think 15 years plus, he said, and he's going to take some calls, and it's another, I guess it takes place alongside the Mike Smith and Gary Stevens stories that continue on. I mean, Robbie's 56, sure. I believe, and, you know, he had, let's be honest, he had a good portion of his career taken from him, more or less.
Yeah, that's quite a story. And I think people should circulate Bill's Robbie Davis story when it happens, too.
Well, the other names and the when you go through the SI vault, and for those that haven't had a chance, you can do a search, and you can say, you can put in Bill Knack, you can put in William Knack, and there's so many things to wade through. Beside the best known, what Knack do you, that stays with you? And
well,
beside the
yeah,
obvious.
The best known ones, you know, the Pure Heart story, Robbie Davis, Sonny Liston, Keith Hernandez. Those are the ones that everybody remembers those. And then I'll say, anything you read that Bill wrote in the 80s and 90s was fabulous. So, I mean, but I, you know, and I can't remember, Steve, if I told you this on your show at a previous time, but maybe I'd mentioned it somewhere else. But, you know, one of the first stories, even though I knew Bill well in the early 80s when I was in the Capital District, he wrote a piece at the end of 1982 on Conquistador Cielo, who was a Belmont Stakes winner, and the entire process by which a whole lot of wealthy people sank their fortunes into Conquistador Cielo as a stallion, and that did not work out well. And the story was about people and horses and money and Saratoga and bad decision making, and it was so well woven together, and it was one of the first pieces about horse racing that I ever read that was so fully formed and so much about society and money and the culture of the game. And it really kind of gave me a roadmap for how I wanted to write about the sport going forward, not ever thinking that I would succeed Bill Knack at Sports Illustrated, but just in my own career. And that's not a story that people outside of racing would ever read, but it's very memorable to me for the way that the depth of reporting and the storytelling and the sadness in the story. It was just fantastic.
I want to direct people. I did it on Twitter and provided the link, but I, you know, there's plenty of people listening that don't have access and don't engage on Twitter, and are probably better for it. But there's also some wonderful resources that it can lead you to. And I directed everybody to the Povich Center's Still No Cheering in the Press Box, which is a Knacks piece on himself. Basically, you're asked to reflect on your career as a sports writer, and Knacks piece is in itself is unbelievable.
It was awkward for me because in writing that, when you write something on social media, a lot of people thank you and praise you and you normally go out and respond to those people and say thank you to them or you're welcome. But I didn't do that this time, and because I just didn't want to call any attention to myself in this entire process. I mean, I wanted to write a story that Bill Knack would be proud of me having written, so I wasn't gonna give it a half swing. But at the same time, this is about Bill, and you know, it's about Bill, and you know, I did hear from his family, and that meant a lot to me. And it's just about Bill, and I want to do the best story I could about Bill, and then get out of the way, I guess is the best way to put it.
Well, there's a treasure trove of Bill Knack's writing, whether it's on the bookshelf or whether it's online, and it'll live forever. And the influence on writers like you and I suppose Michael Farber comes to mind as well.
And well, I so think many we others. All learn from Bill.
Yeah.
I think, you know, Bill went after it. And, you know, you got to go to the Hall of Fame thing. But one thing I'll say is that when Bill left SI in 2001, it was at a time when things were switching over to a more digital format and people were having to write more often and faster. And Bill was never a guy to write often and fast. And, you know, it was Jack McCallum, my colleague, said to me, you know, the problem was Bill sunk his heart and soul and his mind into everything he did, and you can't do that three times a week. And, you know, so, but even in that, there's a reflection on, you know, when Bill was a columnist, he was always known, it was a PM paper, so it was an afternoon paper. So, you know, after the Yankees game, you could stay at Yankee Stadium until 5 o'clock in the morning, and Bill often did. And he did not, I'm not sure Bill ever hit the send key unless he was 100% certain that what he was sending was done in the best, and in the best shape he could make it.
Well, even under these circumstances, it is wonderful that Tim Layden can join us and brings to these occasions and to all visits that thoughtfulness that is greatly appreciated. Tim, thank you.
Thank you very much, Steve. It was a pleasure to talk about Bill. We'll talk soon.
Absolutely. Tim Layden, everybody, and certainly during the Triple Crown, we always enjoy visits with Tim Layden. We're going to visit with Brian Bouye from the National Museum of Racing Hall of Fame. The announcement coming in the last 8 minutes, basically at the top of the hour. And in something of a surprise that can only be expressed, you can only express surprise. There's only one inductee from the contemporary division that's going to be inducted in August. I guess we'll save the reveal. There you go. It's a cliffhanger. Back after this, Brian Bouye joins us to discuss the fact that only one enshrinee from the vote. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. RaceLens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Equibase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats RaceLens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/racelens.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
Enjoy Daily Racing Form's best value with a multi-track PP pack. Get five full-card PPs featuring the day's best racing for only $6. Each DRF multi-track PP pack features full-card DRF past performances for the top tracks you want to play. Handicapping articles and analysis, closer looks for key tracks, and selections by DRF handicappers. Daily packs and longer plans for all budgets are available. Download full-card PPs for five of today's top tracks. Visit drf.com/multi-track today.
Being on the cutting edge of scientific and nutritional research, Biomedical Research Labs has developed the number one selling equine blood builder in the world, the most advanced muscle builder and tie-up preventer, and now the best anti-bleeding paste ever made. To find out how EPO Equine Unlock and Bleeder Guard can help your equine athletes, contact me, Joseph Vellante, at 215-501-6880 and visit brlscience.com.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 3-8-4-6-4-3.